and it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. I've mentioned on past programs that with more and more libraries across the U.S. losing more and more funding over the years, many libraries have become more than, quote, a repository and access point for books and periodicals. So with that in mind, I've started taking a closer look at libraries around the region. On a previous KVC Arts, historian and archivist Nathan Gonzalez spoke to us about the earliest days of the A.K. Smiley Public Library in Redlands, which started off as reading rooms associated with YMCA, and then the library itself, just a few years younger than the city of Redlands. Today we'll hear about a very special part of the A.K. Smiley Public Library, the Lincoln Shrine, though first the many expansions and additions over the years, when and why. Again, Nathan Gonzalez.
One of the most important things that we like to remind people or share about Smiley Library is that even though it was a personal gift initially of Albert Smiley, The thing that most people don't expect is that it's not like Albert Smiley was sitting around with buckets of money wondering what to do with it. He saw a need and knew that he had the ability to fill that need, but he didn't actually have the money to do it. He leveraged his assets in New York in order to borrow money to give this gift to the people of Redlands. So $60,000 in 1898 money to build the library and acquire the property for the park and outfit the park and everything. But he didn't have it, so he borrowed it, which I think is a good lesson for us. When we see that there is need, and we know that we have an opportunity to help support that need, that maybe it's time to break out a credit card and help fill that need, or, you know, something else. There are others who have shown us that as a way to do good works, that we don't have to wait around, and that we also don't have an excuse not to.
Ah, nice. Right? Well put.
So Albert Smiley gave that initial building that way, and very quickly the community was growing, so the library was too small within only about 8 years. In 1906, he decided, I'm going to build an expansion. That was completed in 1907. If you were looking at the library today, that's the big reference wing, which is interesting. They basically dismantled the 1898 East Wall and pushed it down, and then reassembled it. So even though it's the 1907 expansion, you're really looking at the 1898 wall on the east.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then they filled in between and did a second rose window then that was in between that. Moving then forward, Albert Smiley really wanted to do something for children, specifically, a room for children. And they were going to build something, but then he died at the end of 1912. Mm. So that dream went unrealized. The twins had a younger brother, 27 years younger brother, half-brother, I should add. Same father, different mother.
Second round.
Yes. Who knew of and shared Albert's commitment to Redlands and to the Smiley Library, even though he and his children were the ones running the operation at Mohonk Lake. Knew that this was a real desire of his brother Albert, and then the First World War came. So it was going to be very challenging times, especially in the resort industry, you know, to be able to make this gift. And in 1919, he felt that the economy had recovered enough that he could move forward with this gift. And in 1920, the Children's Wing, which is still the Children's Wing today, was dedicated. And just 6 years after that, other leading citizens, in this case, a guy named Elder Jem Lyon, who was part of the citrus industry. Okay. He was one of the grove owners and packing house owners from that side of the world, he decided that he would lead a gift for a new wing, which was where our assembly room is, and there were administration offices and things like that. So that was finished in 1926. And then in 1930, again, the library was too small. And remember, this is now the beginning of the Great Depression.
Okay, yeah.
Very, very tough financial times for people. E.M. Lyon again comes forward. He gives the money to build the library's Stax Wing, and other citizens come together making gifts to outfit it with steel shelves. That's the 1930 expansion. But then there is no change to the library building in terms of expanding it until the late 1980s. But there were two major changes that happened physically to the building in the 1930s. In 1936, the decision was made to eliminate the library's tower. And the reason they chose to do that was there had been a big earthquake in 1933 that was centered near Long Beach. And even though California did have seismic standards for construction, they were not enough, as it turned out. And there was great tragedy as a result of that earthquake. And buildings all over Southern California were reevaluated for their seismic stability. And it was decided that the library's tower did not possess the ability to withstand a massive quake and that it might slide off and into the building. And that would be a bad thing.
I'm surprised I'm finding out there's a tower, or was a tower. Okay, please go ahead.
Yeah. Well, being the Depression, it was more expensive to figure out how to retrofit the tower than it was to simply eliminate it.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was eliminated. Okay. And from 1936 until 1999, the library had no tower.
Mm.
And then in the late 1930s, also, the library was red, this kind of brownish red color from the time it was built.
Mm-hmm.
And it was adorned with these sandstone sculptures. Well, every time it rained, a little bit of the sandstone would dissolve and it would streak down the walls. And so every few years, they'd have to red wash the building to kind of cover it up and make it look pretty again. Well, this had happened so many times that by the end of the 1930s, someone said, well, maybe this isn't the best look. And by the way, by this point, the Lincoln Memorial Shrine has been built. It was finished in 1932. And the Redlands Bowl Procellus is across the street. That was built in 1930. And suddenly the library really doesn't jive with its surroundings. So wouldn't it look nicer if it was just painted white? And then it could look like a California mission.
Mm-hmm.
And so an anonymous donor evidently came forward and gave the money to paint the library white. And so from 1939 until 2002, the library was painted white. But there was no major change in the other than those two things until the late 1980s, even though the population of Redlands had almost doubled in that period of time. This was then the first time that public money was used to expand this building. It was looked at as opportunity to pass a bond to acknowledge the city's 100th anniversary. So we're looking at 1988.
Okay.
That would be the centennial of the city of Redlands. So this bond was couched that way, and it was among the first major issues like that to be passed after Prop 13 in the late 1970s, which is also pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
That expansion, which built additional areas for offices, for book stacks in the lower level, for a space for our friends of the library to operate a bookstore, which supports exclusively the programs of the library, and they run a phenomenal operation, and also a purpose-built wing for the Special Collections Division, and that's what we call the Heritage Room today. So that's the first time public money is used to expand that building.
Do you know if the bookstore, by chance, is it always open? As long as the library is open, is it open? Or is it kind of like every so often you get that, you know, shopping bag kind of sale or whatever? How does the bookstore work there?
The bookstore does keep hours separate from the library.
Okay.
Because it's staffed by volunteers.
Oh,
and
okay.
You can find the Friends of the Library bookstore hours on our website, which, okay, as you mentioned, is akspl.org. The Friends of the Library also have their own webpage and Facebook page. It's the Friends of AK Smiley Public Library.
Gotcha. Okay. Now let's go over to the Lincoln Memorial Shrine. I recently spoke with T.J. Hicks out at the Rancho Mirage Library and with that wonderful observatory. It turns out that was a case of use it or lose it kind of funds that were made available. So they were like, okay, what can we do? And somebody was like, an observatory, man, let's do it. So the Lincoln
cool.
Memorial Shrine, was this another, you know, okay, we've got X number of dollars. How about a Lincoln Shrine? How did this one come about?
That's a great question, and I'll try to truncate it a little bit because it is one of those stories that you can have as much depth as you want to learn about. The short form is that Robert and Alma Watchorn started coming to Redlands to spend the winters in the late 1920s, and tragically they had lost their son a few years after the First World War. He had been a pilot flying over the Alps in open cockpit Caproni bombers, and as a result had some health issues related to that. They came back to Southern California. Ewart is the name of the son. He went to Hollywood High School and graduated in 1914. And interestingly, wanted to study architecture and things like that and worked in the office of an architect named Elmer Gray, who is well known as an architect in Southern California. He did things like the Pasadena Playhouse and such.
Okay.
But then the war came. After the war, Ewart came back to Southern California and worked for his father, who had himself a varied and fascinating career. Robert Watchorn was born in central England in the East Midlands in a coal mining family, realized pretty young as a pit boy that being a coal miner for the rest of his life, like his father had been, was not something that he wanted to do. And like so many people, came to the United States for better opportunity, worked in coal mines, ended up working in the formation of the United Mine Workers Union, was its first secretary, then became involved in factory inspection in Philadelphia and in Pennsylvania in the early 1890s, becomes more involved after becoming a naturalized citizen in the Immigration Service, becomes appointed to as the Commissioner of Immigration at the Canadian border, which is a pretty significant border there, and then eventually is appointed by Teddy Roosevelt to be the Commissioner of Immigration at Ellis Island in 1905, which is the period of time with the highest volume of immigrants to the United States through Ellis Island. So 1905 to 1909, that's the peak. He's overseeing it at that time.
Oh my gosh.
He ends up leaving the Immigration Service because William Howard Taft, who had become president after Roosevelt, failed to make an appointment. They may not have agreed on immigration policy, that kind of thing. Watchorn ends up leaving and happens into a job with Union Oil as its treasurer. So that's how he ends up then in Southern California. And that's why Ewart ends up growing up here as well. Well, he goes off into his own, forms his own business called Watchorn Oil and Gas, and they strike it in Oklahoma. So Ewart is working for his dad at the Watchorn Oil and Gas Company and also working in Southern California, but then dies in 1921. He's only 25 years of age.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, of course, as any, I cannot imagine what it must be like as a parent to lose a child. And people's grief manifests itself in different ways. And for Robert Watchorn, what that meant was using his portion of his son's estate to do good works.
Okay.
So he gave, in Ewart's name, chimes to Methodist churches. He gave playing fields in his hometown in England that were then named for him, for Ewart. He gave a whole church and complex called the Watchorn Methodist Church in Alfreton. When they came to Redlands then,
there's Watchorn Hall and University.
Exactly right. So that's part of this legacy of trying to honor the death of their son. The first thing that they did was give a set of chimes to the Methodist Church in Redlands, which sadly burned in 1967, so the chimes were lost. But during the same period of time, Watchorn recalls a conversation that he had had with his son on a trip to England. And we have the ability of, you know, seeing how things are now, but it's not often easy for us to understand how things may have been in the past. And before the two world wars, there was not always great relationships between the United States and the United Kingdom.
Right.
We had a whole war beginning in 1776 about that.
Yeah,
right?
There was that one.
Yeah, the whole
Any
revolution.
Any history buffs out there?
Yeah. So there was not great understanding necessarily between people in the UK and people in the United States. And what Ewart Watchorn says to his dad is something to the effect of, you know, I think if more people in England understood who Abraham Lincoln was and his character, they would better understand the American people and that relationships would be much better. So this is sometime before the First World War. Well, he keeps this in his mind and after Ewart's death starts thinking back and identifying things related to Abraham Lincoln as a new for him hero. The first thing he does in 1922 is buy a Carrara marble bust of Abraham Lincoln by an artist named George Gray Barnard. And this becomes kind of a prized possession for him, but he's not quite sure what to do with it. But he loves it. And he starts collecting some other things as well. And in the late 1920s, when they decide Redlands is the place that they're going to spend their winters, he's starting to think about it again. In early 1931, he says to the library board, you know, I have this bust, and I'd like to give it to the library so that it can be appreciated by people. And conversations continue, and eventually what happens was they say, well, maybe this is something that really deserves its own space. Not just to have a courtyard or a little wing added to the library, but something that is physically different. And through those conversations, Watchorn then decides to give the funds to build what became the Lincoln Memorial Shrine. And the whole octagon, it was initially an octagonal-shaped building, is designed around that bust from 1922.
Oh, as the center. Oh, wow. Oh.
And then Interestingly, the architect who was hired to design this Lincoln Memorial Shrine is Elmer Gray, with whom Ewart had studied before the war.
Wow, that is really cool. You're listening to KVC Arts on KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking once again with Nathan Gonzalez, archivist and head of special collections for the A.K. Smiley Public Library in Redlands. Now, in addition to the library, we are also talking about something very unique to the library, the Lincoln Shrine. So talk about, please, what a person can find there. Really cool history there. And like I say, with the observatory, somebody had the money. They said, how about an observatory, okay? So we've got the building and this bust. This was, the guy's wife wanted it out of the house, so they built the thing. Okay.
I don't think it was quite that, but.
It was in the garage. Okay, so we have this building that was basically enshrining, as it were, this bust of Lincoln. But then soon we started getting, what, photos and pieces of art. There's interactive displays. If you could maybe walk a person through, as they walk in, what do they see?
Yeah, the museum really has evolved in the period of 90-somewhat years now since it was formed. If you were to walk in today, you would still see as the central focus this bust of Lincoln, and it's on a pedestal that says, "He being dead yet speaketh."
Hmm.
And that really reflects the idea that when it was created, this was intended to be a kind of sacred space where you could come and learn about Lincoln and contemplate what he and his work did for the survival of the nation. And behind the bust on the wall is the Gettysburg Address, the most famous speech in the history of the United States. And you can read it there then. So he sits then before the Gettysburg Address. If you were to look then up, it's a dome shape. And these are all murals that were painted by an artist named Dean Cornwell. If you've ever been to the Central Library in Los Angeles and you go up to its rotunda level, you see these massive murals that depict a unique view of the history of California, I'll put it that way.
Okay.
But he did those between 1927 and 1933. Well, he got this commission to do the Lincoln Shrine right in the middle of that. So you see a lot of similarities stylistically. But you have these allegorical figures around that have different labels at the bottom, like faith and wisdom, and you could go all the way around. And I think the idea was that these would be attributes of Lincoln's character. I think we could also look at them and say that they are attributes of the character of the American people, which is great. But they're done in this angelic-like view, so kind of referencing, as Lincoln said, the better angels of our nature.
Mm.
And then you see two small murals that depict the two great achievements, which is the ending of enslavement of human beings, the end of slavery with the 13th Amendment, and then you also see the unified nation, so holding the map of the United States together as one country. One of the things I like to tell school groups who come in, because everyone probably knows by heart the Pledge of Allegiance, and I know that we said it every day when I was in elementary school.
Sure.
Seems a million years ago. Mm-hmm. Well, when the Pledge of Allegiance was written in the 1890s, really it was one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And it wasn't until the 1950s that under God was added. So we forget the connection between the one nation and the indivisible.
Yes.
And those two little lines are Abraham Lincoln and the American Civil War. Because as a result of Lincoln, we are one nation, indivisible. That's what's depicted in the other mural. Throughout the museum, which we were fortunate enough to be able to expand in 1998, tripling our exhibition space, we focus on trying to tell stories that will help people relate to the era and better understand those critical events in history. So understanding enslavement is critical to understanding Lincoln's views and those of others in the 19th century of why people in the country wanted to split off and try to form a new nation that would preserve enslavement forever. If you just look at their proposed constitution of the Confederate States of America, it's very clear that enslavement is a prime purpose for what they're doing. That'll probably get you letters. Sorry. So we talk about enslavement. We talk about the military aspect of what was going on during the war, because that's a critical piece in understanding the whole evolution of that part of the 1860s. Mm-hmm. We tell a story about women and families, how these things affected them. And then it goes into other more specific than that. Right now, we've got a great exhibition up that I'm really proud of called Imitative Lincoln, art about Lincoln that was derived from photographs.
Oh, wow.
Lincoln, because of when he rose to prominence, that coincided with the early evolution of photography.
Ah.
And so by the 1860s, there were more than, I think, 130 photographs that had been taken of Lincoln, more than any other major character in history up to that point. So there's this great photographic record of Lincoln from really the late 1840s until 1865. And we thought it was interesting that we have all this cool art, and it's all derived from like 7 or 8 of those 130 photographs. So what would it look like then if we grouped these works by different artists, made for different purposes, together with the photograph that they were inspired by? And can we learn something about Lincoln that way? Or certainly we can learn things about history at the time those pieces were created, or about the work of the artists themselves. So it's a whole range from 1860s engravings, which was how you reproduced photos best at that time before the rotogravure process, all the way up to a great Salvador Dali piece that depicts Lincoln as well, and all kinds of things in between.
I don't recall seeing that. You've got a Dali Lincoln representation.
We do.
Oh, wow.
I think it's called Lincoln and Dali Vision, but... I'll have to look that up.
Oh, it's Lincoln melting in the desert. I don't know. I'm just going to have to see what that is. So, wow. I have to say, there's more to the Lincoln Memorial Shrine between the history and what we have there. I'd seen listed interactive displays, but this is truly incredible. You mentioned tours. Does the Lincoln Memorial Shrine have programs separate from the library? I mean, I know it's part of the library, but specific to the shrine? You mentioned the kids coming through for tours every so often. What kind of programs does the shrine itself have?
Helping people to understand this critical time in history means that we have to approach it in a number of different ways. So exhibition is one of those ways, and then educational programs is another. Every year since 1932, with the exception of, I think, one during the Second World War, we have offered a Lincoln dinner where we invite a speaker with some knowledge about some aspect of Lincoln to come and share their expertise with us. And we hold it every year, incidentally, on February 12th, Lincoln's birthday.
Okay, there we go. Yeah.
Without regard to what day of the week it falls, except for in 2023, February 12th was on a Sunday. And unfortunately, it was also the day of the Super Bowl. So for years, we were able to honor Lincoln on his birthday. And I thought, oh, if we have it against the Super Bowl, no one is going to come. So we shifted it to February 11th. But except for when it might run up against something like the Super Bowl, it will always be on February 12th. This year's dinner speaker had done some amazing research over a fair period of time, trying to locate the exact position of the speaker's stand at Gettysburg to know where did Lincoln stand when he delivered the Gettysburg Address.
Wow.
And he walked through the whole research project using all kinds of computer triangulation and things that are way over my head. But it was fascinating, and he has come closest than anyone in history to locating exactly where Lincoln stood when he delivered that speech. So that was just this year's Lincoln dinner speaker. And these dinners are open to anyone. You don't have to be a member of the Lincoln Memorial Association or something like that in order to come. Anyone who wants to come, it's a dinner, so there is a cost involved. But this year's speaker is coming from Christopher Newport University and will be speaking about Lincoln and emancipation. So it should be fascinating. He's also recently written a book for children. So that'll be interesting to see how those things dovetail. So that's one of the events that we offer to try to help educate. We always have a big open house when we unveil new exhibits for the year, and that is in early February. It's usually the first Saturday of February, but I check our calendar to see how that falls. And we bring in reenactors to demonstrate what life was like as a soldier. We have a great reenactor who plays a character he calls Dr. Malarkey and sets up Civil War surgery exhibit.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Kids love it, though. Mm. I mean, oh, Yeah. Amputation of a limb. Oh, that's entertaining.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But that reenactor does a great job. We have live music and all kinds of fun to try to make the experience interesting and fun and also educational. And then there are other smaller events that we have throughout the year. In August, we had a demonstration of a reproduction Civil War artillery piece.
Oh.
People love that. And when those things go boom, every car alarm in a several block radius seems to go off. So that's entertaining.
Nathan Gonzalez, archivist and head of special collections for the A.K. Smiley Public Library in Redlands. Several websites and Facebook and Instagram handles ahead, so get ready to write it down. Or just hit the main website for the A.K. Smiley Public Library, akspl.org. For the library bookstore hours and more, that's run by the Friends of the Public Library, and they have their own website and Facebook page, the Friends of A.K. Smiley Public Library, though you can find at least the hours on the main library website. The library is on Facebook and on Instagram. It's at a.k.smileypubliclibrary, as Nathan said, all squished together. For the Lincoln Shrine, it's at Lincoln Shrine. Also, the A.K. Smiley Public Library Youth Services Instagram pages at AKSPL_kids and also at AKSPL_teens. Or once again, you can just start at the A.K. Smiley Public Library's website, akspl.org. Full disclosure, Dr. Nathan Gonzalez is currently the chair for the San Bernardino Community College District Board of Trustees, the governing body of KVCR. Taking us out of the program now with something from John Beasley, a recent guest on KVC Arts, with a tune often heard going into the new year, and with some really nice arrangements from John. Beasley taking us out of another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Nathan Gonzalez as well as John Beasley. Here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Miley Palacios, Zach Mays, and Shireen Awad. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming with thanks especially to you for listening. And for your support. Give anytime at kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.